Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Do you own or rent your home? Of course you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy though? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing too because you already have so much to do around your house. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Develop some pretty significant dopamine and neurotransmitter responses that essentially desensitize you to pleasure and make you need stranger and stranger things in order to get the same pleasurable response.
Hey, Ben, I'm not being at all flip when I ask you this, but did you in fact really, like, hit your junk with stem cell injections?
Hey, you go from porn to penis is pretty quick.
Yeah, right? Hey now, what's cracking? Welcome to episode 154 of the Jim Rohn Podcast. And let me just say this right off the very top. I've had some amazing conversations in the last 3+ years of running this side hustle, and I'm not looking to take anything away from any of my first 150+ guests. All that said, this might be the single most fascinating conversation that I've had to date. Hell, I'd say this might be one of the more fascinating conversations I've had in the last 3 decades with anybody, either on or off the air. That's how strongly I feel about this one, and you will too, because Ben Greenfield is here. Ben Greenfield is unlike any that you have heard from on this podcast. He's an Ironman, an endurance athlete, a biohacker, an author, a public speaker, a fitness guru, a microdoser, a new age father, an experimenter, and a grizzly bear hunter, and that's only half of it. There is no way to properly set up what you're about to hear, so all I can say is lock in, get ready. Get ready, keep an open mind, and listen closely. You are 100% guaranteed to learn at least a dozen new things. Nothing to it, but to do it. So let's do this thing. Episode 154 with Ben Greenfield starts right now. Ben, listen, I've been looking forward to having this conversation for quite some time. I am pumped to have the opportunity. Thanks for making time for it, Ben. First of all, how are you doing during this most unusual time?
Oh, man. I couldn't be better. I'm out on a walk right now. I am strolling down a farm road through the snow up here in Washington State, getting a little bit of vitamin D on a beautiful day. And, man, being holed away out in the forest has been pretty amazing, actually, compared to being on an airplane every few days and wandering through airports. So I can't complain, man. It's kind of nice, but I'm also one of those introverted loner guys you can leave by myself for a pretty long time, and I'm still happy as a clam. So
I see it working. Hey, Ben, I'm not surprised at all. I'm not surprised at all that if you were going to take this on and do a podcast and have a conversation with somebody like me, you were going to do so while walking and having some movement and getting some vitamin D, right? That's a no-brainer.
That's right, baby. Although it's weird, I didn't really realize this till a couple of years ago. I fall into the small subset of the population who actually can't harness, based on genetic reasons, an appreciable amount of vitamin D from sunlight. Because I used to race Ironman, and I'd be out all summer, on the bike and running and swimming, and my vitamin D levels were always, kind of low, like below 30, and you want to have them, ideally between about 40 and 80, and it was always a head scratcher for me. Then I got my genes tested, and it turns out I don't get a lot of vitamin D from sunlight, but there's a ton of other benefits as well. So I'm still happy being out here.
Good. I'm going to try and circle back and ask you about vitamin D, but I do want to ask you this, like, your background, for those who do not know who are listening: you're an author, you're a physiologist, you're an Ironman triathlete, you're a renowned biohacker, a body and brain performance coach, plenty of things that I would really like to talk to you about. But if you can go back to the very beginning, like, what I'm curious is, I mean, you've accomplished so much in such a short period of time. What was your childhood like? Where and how did you grow up?
I grew up in North Idaho, up in what's called the Panhandle. For those of you familiar with the shape of Idaho, it's that skinny part up near, kind of in between Washington State and Montana. Like you mentioned, I was homeschooled K through 12, and grew up really kind of spent a lot of time outdoors, doing a lot of hiking and enjoying a lot of the nature that Idaho has to offer. And I was kind of always a very curious, independent learner. My parents would give me books, I'd read them. I'd typically finish up all my schoolwork by around 11 a.m. and be out hiking the hills and playing outside afterwards. And I've always been kind of a real curious, almost like an autodidactic guy. I love to learn, and in the past couple of decades, even since graduating university, I've always got my nose in a book, or I'm listening to some audio book, or reading a research journal, and that's kind of how I've been since I was a kid. I've always been kind of a bookworm, but I've also always loved physical culture, the outdoors, all things fitness and diet and nutrition based. And wound up playing a lot of tennis in high school, and then played tennis in college. And after tennis, I played for the water polo team, played whole step for the water polo team, played middle for the men's volleyball team. And then eventually I got into some of the more fringe sports like bodybuilding for a couple of years, and put on about 40 pounds of muscle for that, and had to study up on a lot of nutrition and supplementation to do that. And then I stripped all that weight off and got to Ironman triathlon for about a decade, raced all over the globe, and then raced for Reebok for obstacle course racing for Spartan for about 4 years. And then last year kind of hung up the competition hat, and now I just swing kettlebells in my garage.
God, this shit is so good. So Ben, like, for instance, you do all this work and athletically, and you're active and you're putting in this time, but you discover, Ben, at age 35, that you were biologically actually much older than you were chronologically, that despite all the conditioning and all the unbelievable work and time that you would put into it, your body was actually eroding faster than you expected. What did you think when you first realized that? And then what did you do about it?
Well, it's kind of shocking at first, right? Because, and this is a common phenomenon, especially amongst athletes and exercise enthusiasts, is you can look pretty healthy on the outside, and you can be pretty unhealthy or even slowly, dying on the inside. So when I began to delve into things like blood and biomarker testing, which nowadays is, of course, super easy to do, even from your own home, the stuff that executives would have paid $10,000 for, a decade ago at a place like the Princeton Longevity Institute or Duke or the Mayo Clinic, you can now do for like, a few hundred bucks from your own home. And I started to do a lot of this blood and biomarker testing. And, despite being very fit, I looked good in spandex and could ride a bike pretty fast down the highway. I had rampant cortisol levels and hormone dysregulation. My testosterone was pretty much the equivalent of a 9-year-old girl. I had pre-type 2 diabetes based on my blood sugar levels, rampant levels of inflammation, even like skin, hair, and nail issues shouldn't have been setting in at that time. It's kind of like that phenomenon of when you go to, I used to, like I mentioned, do bodybuilding, and folks who look like Adonis from a distance, and you get up close and you see all the wrinkles and the inflammation and the oxidation settling in on the outside and the skin. And that's the same type of collagen elastin degradation that's happening internally as well. And I began to realize there's a lot more to health than just being fit or having a big aerobic engine or possessing a certain amount of muscle. And that's when I really started to take a deep dive into everything from, the immune system to endocrine regulation and hormones to a lot of the things that impact anti-aging and longevity, and began to think about things, from an athletic standpoint, for more of not just a career standpoint, like how long can I keep my body put together at this pace, but also, how I wanted to feel when I was done competing. I didn't want hip replacements and joint replacements and to be on medications for diabetes and have to get on testosterone and, all the issues that a lot of, even fit people face. So it was just kind of this light bulb moment that being fit and healthy on the outside is not the equivalent of being fit and healthy on the inside.
Wow. So, I mean, I'm not looking to generalize, but then taking all that together, Ben, like, is weightlifting and cardio then, is that a waste of time?
No, I don't think weightlifting and cardio is a waste of time per se. I mean, look, 100 years ago or more, gyms would have been relegated to, to the warrior, to the gladiator, to the soldier, to perhaps the very competitive athlete or the Olympian who competed for a living, right, and relied upon exercise to get their paycheck. And, you know, now, you know, we tend to view the gym or weightlifting or cardio as the way to actually maintain health or longevity, when in fact it's really not. And they've done studies that have shown that, you know, if you, you know, go and do a hard CrossFit workout or weight training session or like a lunchtime, you know, run on the treadmill, it's really not going to significantly impact, for example, your longevity or your cardiovascular mortality compared to the way that our ancestors would have lived, which would have been like, you know, low level physical activity all day long, occasionally sprinting or lifting something heavy, but not doing it, you know, over and over and over again, tearing down the muscles for an hour and a half in the gym. And the problem is, you know, in a post-industrialized era, you know, our jobs are largely sedentary, right? Unless we're a construction worker or a farmer or, you know, perhaps an athlete or someone who actually moves for a living. And because of that, we've had to kind of fabricate activity into our lives, such as that gym session at the beginning or the end of the day or the lunchtime run. And, you know, the problem with that is that most people will do that and then sit on their ass for the next 8 hours during the day. When in my opinion, the very best thing you can do is weave low level physical activity into your day all day long. You know, like I'm doing right now, I'm talking to you, but I'm walking. If it were storming outside or super windy or something like that, you know, and you wouldn't be able to hear me on the phone, I'd be, you know, on the walking treadmill inside my office. I got a kettlebell on the floor of my office. I stopped during the day to do some swings. I got a, you know, a heavy deadlift bar loaded up in the garage where I can go out and lift heavy things, you know, a few times a day. And I try and almost like simulate what a hunter gatherer, you know, ancestral lifestyle would have been by keeping the entire day physically active. And I think that's far healthier than just like destroying yourself in the gym or on the treadmill or by the side of the road, you know, for one single shot at some point during the day and then staying largely sedentary the rest of the day. So it's not that weightlifting or cardio is a waste of time. It's that the way we view exercise, you know, is like this single dose that we do during the day versus just weaving physical activity into our days all day long. That's kind of the issue.
I get that. That makes sense. Now, Ben, you're also a big proponent of microdosing psilocybin or psychedelic magic mushrooms. Now, it seems to me, to the uninitiated, it sounds pretty hardcore, if not reckless. Is it? Like, how and why do you do that? Take us in.
Well, you know, this concept of microdosing, not just microdosing, you know, plant compounds like, say, psilocybin, or, you know, another common one that people will microdose with would be like San Pedro cactus extract. Some people will microdose with the ayahuasca vine, you know, and there's certainly a great deal of research now showing, you know, improvements in mood, increases in neuroplasticity or the ability to learn, to build new brain neurons, to stay focused. There are certain compounds that can increase, you know, social ability for you know, an evening social function, or certain compounds that can increase focus, even microdosing with so-called lysergamides, right? Like LSD, for example, in very small amounts. We're talking like 1/10 to 1/20 of what one would use for a so-called trip dose or heroic dose of said compound. You know, what happens when you take very, very small amounts of these, you know, although, you know, most of them are still, you know, not legal to sell or to use in the US, you actually can get cognitive benefits that go way beyond what you might get from, say, like, you know, other common smart drugs or nootropics, like, say, caffeine or nicotine or something like that. And they can be extremely safe, extremely effective. And, you know, they can really make one's life better when used properly from a microdosing standpoint. Now, you know, as far as, you know, a lot of this research that folks like the, you know, the MAPS Foundation or the folks at Johns Hopkins are doing on these larger, you know, so-called trip doses of the same compounds, you know, there's a time and a place for that type of thing too. Like they're coming out with some really good research on treating depression, on treating post-traumatic stress disorder, or other forms of trauma with these larger doses of psychedelics. But I think that the microdosing of them, you know, it's something that can produce without a hallucinogenic or without a psychedelic effect, some pretty remarkable improvements in the ability to learn, the ability to focus, the ability to be creative. And when done properly, they really can make your life a little better.
Hmm. So, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong. Are you kind of concerned about this notion, for instance, and I'm just jumping around, but this notion that American culture, for instance, is devoid of rites of passage, that maybe we lack rituals or traditions that can signify the changing of chapters in our lives or memorialize that type of thing? For instance, like, it, at least as it relates to your twin boys, are you not addressing that directly? Like, how old are they and what's your plan for them?
Oh, geez, that's a big question. My boys are 12 years old. And, you know, again, if you look at a lot of these, you know, indigenous tribes, hunter-gatherer tribes, the way that our ancestors would have approached, say, the passage from, you know, let's focus on boys in this example, from boyhood to manhood, typically there was some type of rite of passage. Perhaps it was going out on your first hunt and harvesting your first animal for the village. Perhaps it was a week solo out in the wilderness where, you know, just you and your knife and maybe a blanket, and you were left to fend for yourself and prove to the world that you were a man. And, you know, and then typically some type of crucible like that, you know, the Spartans called it the agoge, you know, where the young man would go through some type of brutal training session, or at least something that was extremely character building and kind of hard, you know, somewhere around the age of 11 to 15 years old. After that happened, there was typically some kind of ceremony that recognized that boy's passage into manhood, that recognized that boy's sudden responsibility to need to provide food for the village or to need to provide income for the household, etc. You know, that's largely absent, especially in westernized culture. And what we wind up producing are you know, men from an anatomical and physical standpoint who are still boys mentally, because they never had that recognition that, yo, you've become a man. You know, this is your passage into manhood. You've successfully accomplished your first hunt, or you spent several days in the wilderness on your own and shown that you're able to survive and take care of yourself. And, you know, granted, some rites of passage, if you look into, like, let's say, you know, Native American history, they were pretty brutal. You know, they'd, like, you know, hang, you know, young men, you know, from their skin by hooks from the ceiling of some hut, and then, you know, twirl them around and attach buffalo skulls to weigh them down and have them, you know, let down and run through the village till their skin was tearing off. Like, I'm not about torture, but I do think that, you know, there's something very character building and something very special about recognizing when a boy has actually become a man. So for example, my kids, you know, like I mentioned, they're 12 now, they'll turn 13 in March. When they turn 13, they'll have a 4-day solo out in the wilderness, just themselves, their backpack, a wool blanket, and a knife. And they'll be out there left to fend for themselves, not completely alone, meaning I have a, you know, facilitator who they worked with for wilderness survival for the past 6 years, and he'll check in on them, you know, without them knowing, but he'll make sure they're still alive. And then they'll finish that, they'll come out, they'll go through a ceremony, right, that recognizes their passage into manhood. They'll be expected to begin to provide and kick in income for the household, you know, for heating, for food, for shelter, etc. And that'll be the recognition that they've become a man. You know, for me personally, I never had a rite of passage like that. I spent years, you know, racing around the world and doing all these masochistic events like the Ironman and all these Spartan races and everything. And granted, part of that was just the thrill of adventure, but part of it really was to be brutally honest with you, Jim, it was me kind of trying to prove to the world that I was a man, because I'd never really had that distinct rite of passage and ceremonial recognition that I'd passed through that threshold of boyhood into manhood. And I think that we would have stronger men, stronger fathers, stronger husbands, and more responsible men in our culture if we did have some kind of built-in rite of passage, just as something that was an understanding in our current Western scenario. We just don't. And I think it'd be better for society if we did.
Wow. So, Ben, you mentioned the ceremony. So in the event, or when they complete this ritual, you mentioned a ceremony. What would the ceremony include? What do they get aside from passage into manhood?
Sometimes the ceremony can be very simple. You know, for example, you'll gather around a campfire at the very, very end, and you'll present them with a special gift. Like maybe it'd be, you know, their first firearm for hunting, or, you know, some type of special, you know, engraved knife or something that recognizes what they've gone through. And then, you know, mom and dad cut the cord, so to speak, and tell them, okay, you're free to go out into the world. You know, for my kids, you know, they've expressed a desire when they're 14 or 15 to go off and hike the Pacific Crest Trail. They're also toying around with the idea of, you know, going and touring around Europe. And, you know, that's the type of scenario where you say, okay, you're ready. You're on your own. If this is the time you want to leave the house and go explore, then you've proven to the world that you have what it takes. Off you go. And sometimes it can include even things like plant medicine, like what you alluded to earlier, that, you know, a lot of these psychedelics, for example, they allow for dissolving of the ego, right? And that loss of ego is often accompanied by a real, real deep sense of self and awakening of what one's purpose in life is, and almost like a breaking of the ego to the extent. And I've gone through some pretty hefty so-called ego death experiences using those type of plant medicines that allow you to kind of progress in character and as an individual towards kind of a greater threshold of enlightenment and a manhood. And, you know, that certainly can also be an aspect of an adolescent rite of passage when used responsibly. But it can be something very simple, just a pure head nod, recognition, cutting of the cord, all the way down to like a, you know, plant medicine ceremony. So it really depends.
Hey, clones, I got a question. What do we do when we're craving protein or we need some more energy? I can answer that question by saying what we don't need. We don't need bars. We don't need sugary snacks. We don't need energy drinks. No, what we need and what we really want is beef, pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. It's not shriveled or dry or tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty. It's not tough. And why is it so good? It says here it's so good because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. And Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four amazing flavors. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go. So look for Old Trapper. It's in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're purchasing. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, clones, ask for it by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? You know, Ben, I'm curious. Plenty of parents, myself included, have college-age kids that are not of drinking age, for instance, but it's pretty naive to think that they will not drink when they leave home. You let your kids try wine and even scotch at a very young age. What was the thinking behind that, and how did you approach it?
You get the social worker showing up at my door, Jim.
Yeah, right. Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. So, anyways, the idea is that we don't tell our kids no, you know, for just about anything. I mean, you're granted, you know, if you got a toddler and they're going towards a hot stove and, you know, they're going to get a third degree burn, you know, you want to pull their hand away and say no. You know, there are certain circumstances where you do want to protect your child in a situation where they just don't know any better and don't have the mental faculties yet to make an educated decision. But in most cases, what we do is we use a parenting approach in which we educate our boys about the consequences of any decision that they might make. Then we let them make the decision and deal with the consequences. So what I mean by that is there's no screen time rules in our house, right? Like you can be on screen for as much or as long as you want, but both of my boys have, you know, by sitting down with me and hearing me out, been educated about the effects of, you know, blue light at night, TV at night, screen time at night, and the effect that that has on deep sleep levels and on sleep quality, and then on performance the next day, how good you feel the next day, how well you perform physically, how well you perform mentally. And then I educate them about that and then let them decide how long they're going to spend on their iTouch or on their MacBook or watching TV at night. Now, an important part of that is that if you're going to use that type of parenting approach, you also have to set an example, right? Like I can't educate them about all that and then be whipping out my phone at the dinner table and then pushing my chair away and watching Netflix at night, right? So for me, for example, you know, I'll put on some of those blue light blocking glasses and, you know, I'm usually reading a book or playing a guitar in the evening. You know, I'm not on screen. So it's about educating them and then also setting an example. You know, we could also say the same for something like, you know, gluten. I don't tell my kids, you know, I'm not one of those health freaks that says, oh, you can't touch gluten. Don't eat that. That's off limits. Cause then, you know, what they're going to do at their next birthday party is, you know, that's the forbidden fruit. They'll go shove as many cupcakes in their face as they can because dad's not around. Instead, they know what gluten does from a neuroinflammatory and a gut standpoint. They understand, you know, how much the body can take and how much is too much. They understand the difference between, like, you know, GMO commercial wheat and Wonder Bread versus, say, like a nice, you know, slow fermented sourdough bread that mom makes from a local wheat. And then we let them make the decision. If you want to take that one step further, it's what you alluded to, you know, it comes to alcohol, right? Like when a new bottle of wine arrives at our house and we look up that wine and we go visit the website for the farm where it's produced. And then we pour a little bit into a shot glass and we get the tasting notes and the aroma and then sip a little bit and let it aerate in the mouth and observe and pay attention to the wonderful flavors and complexities of that wine, and then have little sips, you know, from that same shot glass, you know, even, you know, as a young person, you know, in between bites of steak or chicken, for example, to see how it changes and evolves as you eat a meal, you know, that develops this amazing appreciation for something that's entirely natural versus, you know, what I grew up with in my house was I grew up in a very strict house, you know, where, you know, you didn't speak of or touch alcohol. So my first experience with alcohol was stealing a bottle of scotch from my dad's office and getting drunk in my bedroom when I was 14. I guarantee my kids are never going to, you know, quote, sneak, unquote, into the pantry and steal a bottle of wine and go up to the bedroom to get drunk, because they've grown up with a very, very healthy appreciation of and understanding for alcohol. And they also have been educated by me about the consequences of drinking too much alcohol on their liver, on their other organs. And furthermore, like I mentioned earlier, I set an example. You know, I don't overconsume alcohol. So they don't have an example in the house of someone abusing alcohol. So it's never going to be like a forbidden fruit for them. And, you know, I use the same approach with, like I mentioned, screen time, gluten, alcohol, you know, porn, you name it. And I think that educating a child about the consequences of their decision, then letting them make the decision, creates a free-thinking, resilient, independent person who's able to operate on their own two feet versus somebody who's just following rules and then, as soon as nobody's watching, trying that forbidden fruit that they've been banned from.
So what's the approach with porn? The same as scotch?
Exactly the same. So I've sat down with them. We've gone through all the effects that pornography would have on things like your dopamine levels and the need for more extreme forms of porn to get the same type of pleasurable response with repeated exposure. We've talked about objectification of women. We've talked about, you know, how would you feel if that was your sister or your mom or, you know, or your grandma or your daughter or anybody else put into that scenario. There's no porn blocking software on anybody's computer. They know that if they wanted to go to a porn website and just see what it is, they're welcome to, but they understand the consequences of that decision from a neural standpoint and from a social standpoint, in terms of the way that it slowly degrades culture when women are objectified, the way that it affects the brain when your brain is suddenly put into an entirely non-ancestral scenario in which it's surrounded by, you know, essentially mates or mating activity, which is something that human beings wouldn't have experienced at all until the advent of, you know, well, magazines to a certain extent, but nowadays, you know, just reams and reams of pornography being available 24/7 from a computer. That's not something the male brain has evolved to adapt with. And it develops some pretty significant dopamine and neurotransmitter responses that essentially desensitize you to pleasure and make you need, you know, stranger and stranger things in order to get the same pleasurable response, while not being able to be satisfied with, say, you know, your girlfriend or your wife, or, you know, or there's just a real, you know, human woman who you're with.
Right. Hey, Ben, I'm not being at all flip when I ask you this, but did you in fact really like hit your junk with stem cell injections? If so, what was the result?
Hey, you go from porn to penises pretty quick.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was doing a lot of research on anti-aging and longevity, which I became very interested in a few years ago, you know, stem cells was certainly something that came up again and again, this idea that, you know, you can take these young cells that can do things like help to renew joints or fight inflammation or build new cells. And by keeping your levels of them topped off, you can, in a way, fight aging, or, say, you know, get something injected into a degrading joint and allow that joint to repair more readily. And, you know, when I was looking at some of the research, it turns out that stem cells for things like erectile dysfunction or what's called Peyronie's disease in men can have some pretty remarkable sexual enhancement effects. And this was during a time when I was working on about a 6-month article for Men's Health magazine, in which they wanted me to kind of go out and try all the different things that a man could do to enhance his sexual health, his bedroom performance, or even something like his penis size. And so, you know, for that article, you know, because a lot of the stuff I do is just basically pure immersive journalism, I did what's called shockwave therapy, where they use something like an ultrasound machine on your junk to increase the formation of new blood vessels and kind of get rid of old blood vessels to improve erectile quality. I used, you know, a digital penis pump. I did the no ejaculation for a month. I tried all the different gas station dick pills, and, you know, and then we analyzed those in a lab to see what was actually in them. You know, it was a pretty hefty 6-month protocol. But as part of that, you know, one of the things that we did was we had a bunch of stem cells harvested from the fat tissue in my back, grown in a lab to concentrate the availability of the stem cells, then re-injected into my dick to actually see what the effect of something like that would be on sexual enhancement. And it actually, I mean, the results actually were pretty impressive in terms of erectile quality and size and hardness and length of orgasm, et cetera. Obviously, you know, it's not, I think that procedure, if you're going to pay a doctor to do it, would be like over $8,000. I don't know if it wasn't for a magazine article, et cetera, I don't know if I'd actually recommend that as the first thing to do if you're having bedroom problems. But, you know, certainly seemed to work. And the fact that it had been used for some time in research for things like erectile dysfunction and been proven to be, you know, safe in human males gave me the peace of mind that I'd be okay doing it. But, you know, my dick did look like it had been run over by a semi-truck for a few days. You know, it turns all black and blue from all the needle injections. And my wife was a little concerned at first, but it all turned out okay in the end.
The fuck was I thinking asking you that question, Ben? And now I've crossed the threshold, man. My man, I've done this a long, long time. We have never ventured into dick talk, and now we have. I love this podcast. This is fun. Ben, this is really amazing. Like, honestly, all kidding aside, I've done this a long, long time. This is one of the most fascinating conversations I've ever had with anybody, either on or off the air on any platform. I want to ask you this. You're one of the top biohackers in the world, and I really am fascinated by literally everything you're saying. I want to ask you this. Help me reconcile this. Some of the people I admire most, though, are the kind of guys, you know, like the type of Navy SEALs that would say to you, there is no hack. There is no shortcut. There is just work. There is just that grind. There's getting up early. There's staying up late. There's grinding out every single hour in between. There is no such thing as a hack. So where do we come out on this? Is it something in between? Like, I know you're putting in time. I know you're working, but how do you respond to there is no such thing as a hack?
They should come join me in the garage for my kettlebell workouts if they think that I'm not into hard work. I spend a lot of time, you know, in the bitter cold bow hunting and sweating my ass off in a sauna and lifting heavy weights and doing all manner of things that, you know, most people would not even go near, you know, aside from the Navy SEAL, you know, slash CrossFitter slash, you know, masochistic type who believe in the blood, sweat, and tears, because I actually do agree that the body does need, you know, break through certain plateaus to be able to build mental resilience, to be able to build confidence, to be able to build perseverance, to be able to build character. Definitely, you need to do some hard things. But at the same time, there are shortcuts. There are hacks. You know, for example, if I, you know, in my office, I've got two giant red light panels, and I'll go in there and strip off all my clothes in the morning and flip those red light panels on. And it's like I'm bathing in sunlight for 20 minutes every morning. And a lot of times I'll go in and flip those on in the evening when I'm working, because they simulate sunset and sunrise, and they allow my body to get exposed to all these healing infrared rays that I'd normally get from sunlight. But guess what? I live out in the middle of the forest, surrounded by tamarack trees on a north-facing slope where I might get sunlight between about 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. And so I'm shortcutting, right? I'm using a hack to simulate sunlight in my office. You know, similarly, you know, I could try to hike or drive or bike 4 miles down to the Spokane River to do like an icy cold soak in the river, which has a lot of benefits, you know, for the joint, for the brain, for cellular resilience, et cetera. But I instead have this, you know, this biohack right outside my office. It's a 32 degree cold tub that's treated with ozone and UV to keep it clean instead of chlorine. And just me, yeah, I got to break through the ice to get in every morning, but I'll go jump in that thing. And, you know, that's also, it's a hack. It's a shortcut, saves time. I spend 3 minutes in that and I've got, you know, 30 extra minutes during the day that I didn't spend time going down to the river or the lake. And so yeah, I mean, it depends on your definition of a shortcut or a hack. But I would say, you know, when you look at a term like biohacking, anytime you're using science or just like, you know, intelligent technology to enhance human biology or to even get stuff done in a shorter period of time, then, you know, I'm all about it. But yeah, I combine that with blood, sweat, and tears. And so I think you can have the best of both worlds. You don't have to be like, you know, a nerdy computer programmer living in your mom's basement trying to hack your way to fitness. I don't think that's the answer. But, you know, if you're putting in the hard work and then also using technology as the icing on the cake, man, I think that's smart. And I feel better than I did when I was 16 years old, and I'm 38 years old. And I am, you know, I'm incredibly healthy, and you know, all my blood testing, everything shows that to be the case. And it's because I combine the two, both hard work and smart living.
I like that. I like that a lot. Listen, Ben, you're really big also on having something on the calendar that scares you. All right. So like, I can't imagine you're really afraid of much. What's on your calendar right now that scares you?
Well, it's funny you should ask, because right now I am, putting together the pieces for about a 6-day trip over to Africa to live with the Hazda hunter-gatherer tribe and do some mountain climbing and some persistence hunting and some living with an, you know, like an indigenous African tribe, just to be able to get a better glimpse into, you know, how a lot of these hunter-gatherer tribes operate, you know, what a persistence hunt would be like versus, you know, me just going out with a compound bow, actually, you know, running an animal down over sometimes, you know, over 100 miles. And, you know, that's something that's coming up that certainly will push me outside my comfort zone. And it doesn't have to be something physical, right? Like, I could have signed up for whatever, you know, stand-up comedy night 3 nights from now and, you know, had to create a set and get up there in front of a bunch of people and try to make them laugh, or, you know, sign up for an open mic night and learn a few songs of the guitar and go play in front of a bunch of people I'm nervous playing in front of. You know, it's kind of, the sky's the limit, but I'm always a fan of having something on the calendar a few months out that scares the hell out of you, or at least pushes you pretty far outside your comfort zone, because that's what keeps us growing physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Hey, really quickly, Ben, what happened to, you had a trip that was scheduled for Alaska for this past August. You didn't do that, right?
No, I was supposed to go up for 10 days and do a fishing, grizzly and moose bow hunting trip up in Alaska. And I decided instead, because those are 10 days, you know, let me put it this way. You know, my boys, they're only with me, you know, until maybe maximum they're 18 years old, you know, probably closer to like 15 or 16 at the rate that they're going. And those 10 days away from my boys, I can do that when I'm 45, you know, or 50. And so I instead wound up taking my boys out for a 6-day wilderness survival course to spend time with them. Cause I look right now as a father of young men who are going through a stage in life where they really, you know, they need their dad around as a teacher, as a mentor, as a motivator. You know, I would rather choose activities in which I can be with them. I'm even trying to see if I can get them to come over with me in February over to Africa, if that's something I wind up doing. And so, you know, I'm kind of looking at life through that lens of this period of my life as a father and choosing activities that I can have my boys be with me on. Cause you know, they're only going to be around for so long in terms of being right there in the house.
So Ben, did you graduate college when you were 16?
No, I started college when I was 15. I graduated college when I was 20.
Okay. Okay.
With a master's degree in exercise physiology and biomechanics.
Right. So what's their path? If you feel like that they're going to be gone when they're 18, will they take a similar path? What do you think they will do?
Well, to be frank with you, what they're interested in doing right now is on the, you know, they're unschooled, meaning they don't follow a set curriculum. We just surround them with as many, you know, books and games and tutors and activities that fuel whatever it is they happen to be passionate about in the moment. Then we just sit back and let them, you know, educate themselves. When I left the house, they were outside building a snow fort, and you know, it's the kind of stuff they spend their day doing. You know, they read, they still do some math, you know, and there's 12 core subjects that Washington State requires that you prove that your children have been engaged in. But that's pretty easy to accomplish, right? Like chemistry can be you know, like yesterday, they spent 4 hours at a local restaurant getting trained by a chef on how to make pasta and all these amazing Italian dishes. And, you know, that satisfies social studies. It satisfies chemistry. It satisfies math. You know, they built a giant tree fort last year with the local contractor. And, you know, that satisfied also like math, geometry, trig, stuff like that. So that's kind of the way they learn. But with the path they're on, they're probably going to be ready for college when they're 14, 15 years old. Like I mentioned, they want to take a gap year, go hike the Pacific Crest Trail, or, you know, go travel around Europe for a while. And they're both very interested in art, in music, in cooking, and in writing. And they're actually also very interested in getting a liberal arts education. So at this point, there's a small college called New St. Andrews in Moscow, Idaho, that they're interested in attending. And, you know, I anticipate if that's what they decide to do, they'll probably be, you know, going to college when they're 15 and a half, 16 years old. And, you know, and who knows, they might come out the backside, decide they want to be a lawyer or an engineer or a physician or whatever. But I just tell them, you know what, identify what it is that your unique purpose is in life. Identify the unique skill sets that you were born with, the things that come easy to you, or the things that you're passionate about, and then go out and bless and love as many people as you can with that passion. And you don't have to worry about money. You don't have to worry about income. Just find your purpose in life and go out and love other people with that purpose, and you'll be set.
Amazing. Really quickly, and I so appreciate this conversation, I know that you've worked with, well, I mean, numerous CEOs, sports organizations. I'm really curious, Ben, about the work you've done with the Miami Heat, because they've got one of the more fascinating cultures in all of sports. I mean, they're just different. They're not for everybody. Not everybody fits into their system. Not every athlete thrives in their system and culture. What was it like to work with them, and did you spend time with Pat Riley in particular? What was that experience like, or is like?
I didn't do a lot of work with them. I did a few brief consulting trips down there about a year and a half ago, primarily to look into things that they weren't thinking about. We're talking about things like, you know, air quality at the gym there in American Airlines, what kind of water the players were drinking, customized nutrition profiles set up for each player, you know, what the lighting was like, you know, whether the lighting was natural or conducive to the circadian rhythm and the sleep habits of the players, different supplements and things to help with, you know, jet lag and travel. And it was more just me meeting with Eric, the strength coach, and Eric, the head coach, about different things that could be implemented, you know, for air, light, water, electricity, nutrients, supplements, et cetera. And, you know, it was a pretty brief consulting gig, but I'm in no way officially, you know, affiliated with their staff or anything like that. They just brought me in as an independent consult to chat for a little while about a few things.
All right. So finally, and I get that. I appreciate that. Finally, people listening right now, there is so much more. You and I can do this for hours. You're also the creator of the Longevity Blueprint. Exactly what is that?
That was a firm out of Malaysia called Mind Valley, and they create these online learning courses. And because I study up so much on anti-aging longevity, it's the entire, you know, kind of thrust of my new book, Boundless. They wanted to create almost like a course that systematized what exercises you do, what kind of smoothies you drink in the morning or supplements that you take, you know, what kind of outdoors activities do you do, how many reps, how many sets, you know, what we cover everything from, you know, stem cells to exercises to nutrition to, you know, the most fringe biohacks to the really basic natural stuff that a lot of these so-called blue zones around the world are doing, where people are living a disproportionately long period of time. And we just wove that all into kind of like a done for you curriculum. So rather than it being a book that you read, it's more like a online series of videos and courses that you take where you follow along with the workouts or the recipes, et cetera. That particular course, you know, they brought a film crew out to my house, and really I would say it's a little bit skewed more towards kind of like the exercise and movement component. Whereas my book is more all encompassing as far as nutrition, supplementation, biohacking, et cetera. But it's a good course for anybody who wants to kind of tap into, you know, how should you exercise and move if you want to live a long time.
Ben, your book is Boundless. I want to make sure listeners know that the book is Boundless. Ben, if there's a place, or if people have any other interest or questions, or they want to continue this pursuit, where would they go? What's the best way to get access to you and information?
Yeah, I put out a podcast a couple times a week. where I interview somebody way smarter than me. So a scientist, a physician, a researcher, et cetera, usually in the realm of health or fitness or nutrition or performance. That's at bengreenfieldfitness.com or wherever you download podcasts. And then I also write a couple of articles a week on those same type of topics. Again, that's all at bengreenfieldfitness.com. And then, like you mentioned, you know, my book Boundless, which is at boundlessbook.com. It's about 650 pages, jam-packed with a whole bunch of additional stuff for people who just want a hefty paperweight for their desk.
My man, I love this notion of you interview people who are much smarter than you. I don't know how many of those people you find, but I really, really appreciate your time, Ben. It was long. It was well worth the wait. It was well worth the wait, and I appreciate the conversation very much. It's amazing how much content that we got into that window of time. So thank you very, very much for that, and I got so much out of that, and I know the listeners did too.
Hey, I'll talk about psilocybin and dicks with you anytime, Jim.
My man. My two favorite topics. Ben, thanks very much, man. Have a great day. Thank you, man. I appreciate you.
All right, catch you later.
So, do you own or rent your home? Of course you do, and I bet that can be hard work. So, you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Remember when I said that might be the most interesting conversation I've had ever on this pod? Right. Now you know why. What a mind-blowing, mind-opening episode. And if you want to get more from Ben, check him out on Twitter. He's at Ben Greenfield. And the links to everything he's doing are right there on his page. So an enormous thanks to him for that. And thanks, as always, to you for listening. Make sure you get subscribed on your way out and tell a friend about the best side hustle going right now. And I appreciate it, as always. We're back next week with another fresh ep. But until then, here are your voicemails.
First new message.
I mean, this is Alan in Pittsburgh. I'm not going to be able to sleep all weekend after the foreskin with ears comment. That is the best ever. Love the show. Be safe.
Message deleted. Next message.
Hey, Jim. Steve in Santa Fe again. I just got through watching the tape of your show. That song, Rip V-Hawk. Parody Larry is Beethoven meets the Rolling Stones compared to this guy's mess. It is funny, though. You got to give it that. See ya.
Message saved. Next message.
Hi, Jim. This is Trevor calling from the 321. Just wanted to say it was a damn fine and funny week in the jungle this week. So thanks to the input, the XR4TI. Mostly thanks to you, Jim, because you bring it every day, and I truly appreciate that. I really needed some laughter in my life this week. Everybody brought it, so love you, my man.
Message saved. Next message.
Ben Smack, it's Kenny in Albany. I had to gas up that Jim Gray podcast. I mean, that thing wasn't a podcast. That was a conversation between two legends. I thought you guys were sharing a beer, just talking about life. Thing was freaking sweet. Damn, Rit. Good job, I guess. That's the one thing you didn't screw up this week. Late.
Message saved. Next message.
Hello, Van Smack. It's FedEx Keith in Missouri. Hey, my dad went in for a heart test, and he failed it and was rushed off to the big hospital, and he had the COVID, and they isolated him, and we didn't get to see him for a while. So the jungle, as heartless as it is sometimes, takes care of its own. So if anybody else going through that, I want you to know, man, we're not alone out there. The jungle's with them. You don't know what it feels like till you go through that, Van Smack. So I'm going through it. I just want everybody to know that the jungle's with them. Thank you so much. Enjoy the show. Bye.
Message saved. Next message.
Hi, Jim. This is Ken Milwaukee. I just want to thank you for all your Wisco talk. I know your son goes to Madison, and you got real estate up in the Eagle River, and all the Packer talk that you do. You had Aaron Rodgers on, Aaron Jones, Paul Crisp. A lot of Milwaukee Buck talk and Brewer talk you've done through the years. I just want to thank you a lot, Badger Jim. You're doing a very good job of keeping us up to date on all the sports in Wisconsin. I just want to know if you can maybe someday get some local sports, like the local bowling scores, on at the end of the show someday. Bye.
Message saved. Next message.
Van Smack. Ben has the greatest reception in the car today. Did you say podcast 154 is about an athlete injecting PhDs into his junk? How the hell did Britt land Barry Bonds for the podcast? Can't wait to hear this.
Message saved. You have no more messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.